Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm glad everybody here can make it for the fashion show. Once upon a time, brick by brick, our past has been laid, from legendary figures to the everyday people like you and me. All have played a pivotal role in our journey. If the past could speak, what would it say? This is a show that explores just that, from the good, the bad, the ugly. Let's try to make sense of it all together. When the nonfiction is more frightening than anyone could imagine, we look to art to help me in telling the story that begins with Once Upon a Time, a show that gives history to and a voice and brings beauty to ugliness. Once upon a time, events and people shaped the world we live in today. So join us in the journey of exploring our past, a show where poetry and reality meet to withstand the test of time. And good evening, late night poets and all poetry, and good evening, Pam.
Good evening, Dexter. How's it going?
It's going, and it's going pretty well. I can't complain. So you know, we're here. I'm glad we're able to do this show again and give the poets what they wanted, because a lot of them wanted to hear this show. And man, that's really the totality of it. That's what it's all about. We're here to really showcase our poets, and we were bummed out last week that we didn't get to do this. So we're ecstatic, and we're excited to be able to do this again. And I'm glad to be able to do it with you. How are you doing?
You know what? All in all, I'm doing great. You know, I might have some complaints, but they wouldn't do me much good. And really, just like you, I'm happy. I'm happy that Blog Talk is back up and working. We get to do this show for the poets. And, you know, it's just going to be great. We've got a great lineup of poetry, as always. Looking forward to hanging out with you and, who knows, maybe some other cool poets. I see Stelina on the board. So hello, Stelina. Good to see you. And all good.
Hello, Stelina. Yeah. And just to kind of plug our current contest right now, we have a Nazi Germany contest going right now. We added another week to it, and we are going to just push that one back another week. And also, you know, we should be getting some of these other contests kind of judged up, things like that. So please be patient. You know, this Blog Talk Radio and a few other things have kind of delayed a few things, but expect your poem to be read and expect your contribution to be appreciated, you know, here coming up. And so, you know, Pam, why don't you tell us a little bit again about this beauty and fashion contest? I know me and you were kind of on the same page about doing it, and we were really passionate about doing it, but I really appreciate the fact that you went the extra yard and kind of put it together. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I think when it comes to beauty and fashion, people really don't connect the importance of it always with history. But it really is, because since the early Roman and Egyptian times and all throughout history, clothing and cosmetics have been highly influenced by political and cultural elements. It is oftentimes a fascinating and dark history, part of history, because of the fact that throughout history, social pressure, especially for women, has made them go to some absolute extremes when it comes to keeping one's face and figure, how, you know, what the beauty standards of the day is. And we had a different time period, plus we had some artwork, some quotes, and just really, and even I, learned quite a bit. It's really fascinating, you know, to learn certain things like about like Queen Elizabeth I's makeup, the fact that they actually in Victorian times had corsets made for babies and children, or that the what's considered the modern day bra actually became popular and in use during World War II, when the metal that was used for corsets had to stop being used because of the metal shortage because of the war. And also, you know, of course, we had the flappers of the 1920s, which was very much a feminist political statement. So absolutely a lot of intriguing stuff. And I was really glad the way that people like latched on to these prompts and really just ran with them in all kinds of different directions.
Me too. And you know, one thing that you said too that was that was spot on is, you know, researching and digging up, you know, and so I hope everybody out there can appreciate that we do our due diligence in trying to make sure that the prompts is we can make them. And so I'm excited about here tonight's show.
Me too. And we are going to start out. Well, I guess if you're ready to get the ball rolling, I am.
I am too. Well, that's right, from our previous show. So let's, from our previous show.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Yes.
We do have carryovers. All right. Well, we're going to start out with 200 is the Cost by Cody Rixon. And Cody was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Once upon a time, my ancestors were alive. But from back then, only a few would survive. Even back when the eagles soared freely, my people were not being treated ideally. When the buffaloes still roamed these lands, they were driven right off, labeled as bands. My people were suffering, body and spirit. You didn't listen hard to be able to hear it. Pulled from their homes, stripped down bare, kept all as slaves under the guise of care. Taken by wolves, saying they're shepherds, but their ways are exotic, just like leopards. Our culture and our language, all but lost. 200 kids' lives was finally the cost. Why were they taken from our people at all? No justice, no matter how much we all wrawl. And those who survived it bear the scars, lived in places that were human abattoirs. Prayed to the Creator for fear of this God, constantly beaten and told they're flawed. But the beavers are all out, still swimming. The deer are in the grass, always trimming. Those buried are lost, but not ever forgotten. The Creator has them, hell has all the rotten.
Great read there, Cody, and thank you so much for the SoundCloud. And Pam, why don't we kick us off with you?
All right. Well, yeah, I really appreciate the SoundCloud. And I have to say that is one silver lining to the dark cloud that was Blog Talk Radio last week, because last week I had forgotten about Cody's SoundCloud, and we didn't want to carry it over for another week, so we had you read it, which you did a wonderful read of it. But of course, you know, it's always better to hear the right in the poet's own voice. So the fact that we had to carry Cody's poem forward again, and this time I actually remembered his SoundCloud, really, I mean, that is awesome. He did a wonderful read of it. I really like this one. As I had said before, this one, it pulls at my heartstrings because this is it's the murder of children, which is just horrible and sad, but it's also trying to kill off somebody's culture. It was even before they physically killed these children, they tried to emotionally kill them. They basically said, your culture doesn't matter. Your history doesn't matter. You're not good enough. And to me, that's a horrible thing. And it is so sad. It is so sad. I think faith can be a beautiful thing, but it's so sad what so many people will do in the name of religion. The violence, the horror, you know, the inhumanity of it all. But I love this all the way through, but I have to say that the lines that stood out to me especially were kept all as slaves under the guise of care, taken by wolves, saying they're shepherds. And then the ending, which gives us a sense of hope, you know, and a sense of justice. But the beavers are all out, still swimming. The deer are in the grass, always trimming. Those buried are lost, but not ever forgotten. The Creator has them. Hell has all the rotten. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. And yeah, I really, when he wrote this one, I thought this one hit it perfectly because we were talking about human sacrifice. And the prompt that I really kind of connected this with, this one too, was the Western civilization, where a lot of the Western people thought that almost like they're above this, right? It's like, oh my God, these are savage people to be doing this and this and that. We've done so much tenfold the savage acts of anybody. Who are we to say that because somebody sacrifices that person that they're savage, but yet we're the ones that move in and kill these people and try to kill their culture? Who are we to ever judge anybody? And so I connected this one heavily to that, and I thought that he did a fantastic SoundCloud, and I'm glad that we could redo this show. Cody was actually one of the people that I thought of when we redo the show, because he's a fairly new poet on here. I wanted him to... We talked about it on how he could get his SoundCloud done. His was one that I wanted to hear, you know. And so I'm so glad that we got to play his, because this was really powerful, and I thought that it connected really well on with the prompt. So very well done, and I'm hoping to hear more from Cody. So
me too.
Pam, with that being said, go ahead.
All right. Well, up next we have Where is the Innocent Now by Nan529. And it goes like this. Egyptian sun beats down burning golden sands, land of pharaohs, hidden mysteries buried deep, secrets kept within. First of the pharaohs was King Horasaha, who ruled this land. He was known as Fighting Hark. Hunting in his chariot one day, he entered the underworld. Egypt is in turmoil. King Horasaha was dead. Rumors circulated King died hunting a hippo, or was it a crocodile? Huge procession of mourners weaving its way by the River Nile. Burial chambers laden with treasures for his passage into the afterlife, where Osiris awaits. Bodies of young men strangled. Some beheaded, laid to rest in a wooden chamber above the king's sarcophagus. The pharaoh rests. Slaves, men and women, dwarves, precious dogs, pride of pet lions, all killed to serve their master in the afterlife. Wine jars, hundreds, pots of food, incense burn in the pharaoh's tomb. Full-size, large wooden boats to carry the king. Sealing the tomb, all is quiet, for the dead tells no tales. Oil lights flicker, pungent smells of death fill silent chambers, until at last the oil burns no more. Now there is no light in darkness, the dead sleep. Time passes as time does. Day follows night, earth orbits around the sun. Centuries pass until at last secrets are revealed of slaughter. Painted hieroglyphics tell the tale of kings and gods, of battles and glories and hunting chariots. Gone too are the pharaoh's resting place, treasures, mummies, displays, and museums for everyone to see. And of the innocent killed to serve their king, where are they now? Their bones have turned to dust, returned to the earth. In life and death, they are of no importance, forgotten like footprints in the sand, for everybody focuses only on the pharaohs. Memories of the human sacrifices blown away. I ask, where are the innocent now? End poem.
This was a spectacular piece by Nan. They nailed the pharaoh of, you know, King Horus, And as we talked about before, the human sacrifice, it seemed everybody had kind of like anticipated that it lived on for a long time, but it actually only lived on in a lot of cultures for a very short period. And that was exactly what it was in ancient Egypt. It was only in the first dynasty and the first two pharaohs, as far as people know. And what this talks about is how tough that pharaoh was, right? I mean, it talks about him leading hunts and things like that. He was supposedly killed by a hippo. And so Nan did their research, talking about hippo or a crocodile. Maybe there was some rumor. Everything that I've read it was that he was killed by a hippo on a great hunt. Maybe there was some rumors or a crocodile. This is so long ago, any of which could be true. And then they talk about the resting pig, innocent to serve their king, and dust to return. You know, that there is no importance for these people. The focus is on the pharaoh. And so they bring it full circle. And that's what I really appreciate about the rite, is because I don't think that they, like, get lost in saying that the pharaoh was some type of liar or something, because back then the pharaoh actually was compared to what it is now, the pharaoh is actually a stud, right? If he's leading out the hunt, and he was actually like the main, this guy, their first two pharaohs were the two most badass guys in battle. You know, you would think that, yeah, there is going to be some people that follow that. But it's also, too, implying about the people that died and that they lack importance in this. And so I just thought that this was a fantastic rite, really encompassing the entire thing. So, Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really like this. And I like what you had to say. And, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, and honestly, if you think about it, yeah, we don't do human sacrifices anymore, thank goodness. But we have hero worship nowadays just the same as they did then. You know, it's only their heroes, you know, went hunting after crocodiles, and our heroes, you know, throw a cylinder-shaped ball around whatever it is.
Or YouTubers or something or whatever. You know,
yeah, exactly. Like. Exactly, you know. And so as far as, yeah, hero worship goes, that's definitely, I think, always going to be around. I did like Nan's attention to detail, how you could tell she really did her research and looked into this. Another thing I particularly like about this is the message, especially at the end, where she reminds us that history isn't just made by the famous people, the leaders, the kings, you know, that those who have achieved greatness. It's made by the common folks, the farmers, the servants. Those who would be considered mundane are all a part of history, but because they don't sell the tickets at the museum, well, you know, they are not searched for, they are forgotten. And I actually, this was one of those rites that I definitely learned something from. Like, I did not know this pharaoh was killed by a hippo. I also did not realize that they would bury pretty much everything, you know, like including, you know, like dwarves and pets such as dogs and lions. I mean, I knew slaves and wives would be buried with them. But it was fascinating to learn that other stuff. So really great write by Nan that just digs deeply into the topic of human sacrifice in ancient Egypt, and, you know, coming full circle to the history of times and people forgotten. So very well done.
Thomas or Pam. And, you know, and I guess everybody can make their own assumptions, because there are people that deny, I guess, kind of semi-deny this claim. It was something that has been kind of stewed upon for a long time. But this was the first pharaoh of the first dynasty that brought Egypt to its, like, being a powerful nation. And they found around 100 people that were in between the ages of 20 to 25 buried around the pharaoh. And so you can connect. So if you're out there and you have denial about it, that's all good. But you can also, that's what everybody has connected the dots on, is that it would be impossible that these many people between the 20 to 25 age range skeletons would all be buried right next to him. So thank you, Nan, and fantastic, right?
Oops, sorry. I accidentally forgot to grab the next one. So just ignore the fact that I've posted Nan's poem over again.
That's okay. We're right on point. We're right on.
Let me try this again. All right. So up next we have The Human Barbecue by Peter Solway. And go ahead, Dexter, and give that a read.
Okay. This is The Human Barbecue by Peter Solway. Welcome to the planet of cannibalism, tender feast of fresh kills, virgins on spits, bruise of heated genitals. Praise be the bloody god of muscles, soup of our mother-in-laws, old mutton tender, her daughter next. Eat the whole fucking universe, face and balls and all. Sauce of defeat to rip, rest of the intestinal piece. Crass cannibals licking fat lips, fasten seat belts, landing in Belsen, Auschwitz, shit. Highlands of volcano land. Pleasing rhyme maidens slowly roasting, savoring the flesh of fresh victims. Kentucky fried wisdom. New wars to come. Soup of young ones glowing with radium. The honeymoon islands, no memorials. Next pathetic poet in line, yell hallelujah. Sisters and brothers composed and mothers. Once a bicycle warrior, feather and hair. Come to greet ya, tell the saga of Norse. Sacrifice of frigid housewives, chant Aztec priests endless. Sharpened it's his implement. Sun going down, dinner to warm, nipples marinate, orange beans, but forever flavor, depths of disappointment, Dante's damned hell, jungle rum, endless monkeys tested, jagged, statistical, results fundamental, clad, chap, wine in gold vestments, permanent rest, mute the hound of death, Christ a twist of cross, ingredients of thieves, kick and dispute, spice and willingness, Aztec sluts to spill their guts, feast partake if not for U.S., yum, Chinese ovums, North Korean dumplings, rat killed in empty fry pan, sacrifice the leaders, realism, posters of on ceilings, Stalin, knives sharpened, bony Nixon, Kissinger, cock-sucking Dixie, bomb the obliging Cambodians, bomb every fucking one, SS, thy will be done, a war will be won, sacrificial altars and tradesmen plastered, virgins to gas chambers, gold teeth to war efforts, John and Yoko to mourn the loss of willing fans, demented and ancient, false teeth, soiled breath, specialists of Aztec admissions, late night, Larkins once upon a studied time, chief librarian, now drunken and morphine, babbling buildings of the Old Testament, a will to surely dispute, a cat put down, end poem. And Pam, let's start with you on this one.
All right. I remember someone said the other day, I can't remember who it was, but we had read one of Peter Solway's poems, and they said mentioned that his poems oftentimes are written in such a way that you feel like you're looking at a Muriel. And I could see that. I can definitely see that. It's like each individual stanza could stand on its own and yet make a complete picture. And here we have quite a fascinating, visceral, and horrific picture of death throughout many cultures. All these different cultures, all these different time periods of history, from ancient history to even cannibalism of modern times. It's all here to be just gawked at in this just display of blood and guts and, you know, violence. And, you know, I have to say it would be interesting to see if he decided to, what Peter would come up with for the Nazi Germany and Holocaust contest. There's so much powerful lines in here. I really like eat the whole fucking universe, space and balls and all, sauce of defeat to rip breast and intestinal peace, crass cannibals licking fat lips, fasten seatbelts, landing at Belsen, Auschwitz shit. He takes us through all these different time periods where, and some we automatically think, you know, like when we look at the Aztecs, when we look at the ancient Norse, or, you know, and we automatically think of human sacrifice. You know, do we necessarily think of human sacrifice when we think of, you know, the more closer to modern deaths? Not necessarily, but because it isn't necessarily done in the same way. If I'm trying to think how to word this, but anyways, it's almost like,
no, you're right.
Yeah, you know, we
you're
have
right.
like a preconceived notion of what it means to be what it means to have a human sacrifice go on. And we don't always connect that with our modern atrocities of history. And of course, his wordplay is just as always thoroughly entertaining. So wonderful, right? And very well done.
Oh, you're exactly right. You know, there's tons of modern atrocities. You could, you know, there's people that could make the standpoint that, you know, from 9/11 to the war that transpired, all being sacrificed. I mean, unfortunately, but the Peter Solway, you know, like you said, he brings this whole realm upon you, and I thought that this was absolutely fantastic, talking about the cannibalism. I like that. I feel like, you know, when the time arises, or maybe not even when the time arises, I just think that Peter Solway goes about it as, like, hardcore as he possibly can. And I really appreciate that, because there's always a place almost for, like, shock value, because that's where a lot of change comes from, right? If you look at the billboards and they're talking about drunken driving or something like this, it's like, you will kill people or whatever it is. There's a lot of change that comes from shock value. And so I feel like Peter Solway introduces so much shock value into his poetry. It's talking about a lot, you know, and so it's just a fantastic piece talking about how shocking and how violent society has been, no matter what way you want to sugarcoat it, no matter whose culture it is, we are violent at heart. And Peter Solway made us realize that in this piece. So very well done. And Pam, what did you think? Take us to the next one.
All right. Up next, we have One Man by Diego Serebrennic, and it goes like this. The most beautiful virgins, the strongest warriors, the tenderest children, the spouses of kings were offered to God in exchange for triumphs and crops. Fair Iphigenia was offered to Artemis, so she blew the west winds that carried the Achaeans to Troy. But one man one day was called from above, and without any trade and without any cause, was told to offer his only son, and the man did not ask what for. And when he raised the dagger, the flow of life entered his heart, and an angel said, no. End poem.
Yeah, I thought this was a fantastic write. And, you know, obviously talking about even some of the biblical terms of Abraham. And, you know, what's expected out of you as a God, you know, and sometimes it's pretty chilling. Because why would this even become a normal practice, you know? And so that's another thing. This is another shot almost on Western civilization, because why would this even become a normal name, you know, not a reason to, you know, when you're talking cancel culture, but different religions and things like this aren't almost under cancel culture, when yet they're talking about sacrificing your only son. So there's a lot of question that takes place in this piece, and I thought it was a fantastic write. Pam, what did you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I like how he goes from one culture to the next. Like he writes on the ancient Greeks, and then he moves on to the story of Abraham and his son Isaac, and how he was asked to sacrifice. And I as I said last time, I did like the ending, because where it says, and when he raised the dagger, the flow of life entered his heart, and an angel said no. Because they're just like the whole idea of the flow of life entered his heart. It's almost like it was in part his own conscience speaking to him, or at least it kind of came across that way to me. I also, it's interesting to ask the what if of stories. Like you got to wonder, and keeping in mind that, you know, not everybody believes the Bible stories, or some people only believe parts, which is, you know, fine. But, you know, what if, you know, what if Abraham had said no, or he hadn't been able to do it? How would the story have been changed? But it's just fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. The idea of going from the willingness to sacrifice spouses and children on a grand scale to facing the death of an individual child by your own hands. So just an amazing rite and very well done.
Yeah. Very shocking material, no matter what way you want to slice it. So, perfect. So, Pam, where are we heading to next?
Well, now we are going to move on to our fashion and beauty contest entries. And
okay.
With that being said, up next, we have It's Better to Look Good Than Feel Good by If You Are Abs. And go ahead and give that a read for us.
All right. It's Better to Look Good Than to Feel Good by If You Are Abs. Is makeup toxic? Dr. Martin taught me the dose is the poison. Chemicals prey on skin cells, but changeling faces. Reflect inner emotions and recycle the brain endorphins. Would Ziggy Stardust play the Tower Theater without Carmine? lips rogue and pancake white cheeks. Hellfire and brimstone, I would have waxed my car with Dave's face if the spiders and roadies bouncers let me crash the stage. I missed Glitter Rock in 73 and the Stones and Stevie the year before, but sculpted animal magnetism caked onto faces of entertainers were worlds apart, non-sage glow of yellow snow. I dared to flesh out the poem's wrinkles with some collagen, but Medicare said my stars weren't aligned. Pufferfish paralyzed, I called Billy Crystal, all powdered up under hot lights, playing Fernando's Llamas, and he intoned, "You look marvelous, baby." All gift wrapped for the fans and in your ribbons, bows, and war paint, crowed and struttering with moves like Jagger, crazy legs churning, high atop a Bowtech end poem. And Pam, let's start with you.
Well, great read there, Dexter. I really liked your Billy impersonation there. That was awesome. So,
I gave it a little shot. I guess I don't have the best New York accent, you know, but I'm sorry.
Well, you know, considering you're a guy from the Midwest, it was pretty good there.
Yeah, we do our best.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I really like this. And it's another good reason that we got to redo this show was because If had done a little editing of his poem, a little minor details, which of course I already thought it was a great poem, you know, but, you know, it's nice to be able to present the poet's work on the show as they have offered it up. I really like not only the references to the poison and the toxic chemicals within makeup that's offered here, but how he has cultural references of the Ziggy Stardust time period, you know, David Bowie, which of course was who sung the intro song we had for tonight. I really like I Missed Glitter Rock in 73 and the Stones and Stevie the year before, but sculpted animal magnetism caked onto faces of entertainers were worlds apart. An onstage glow of yellow snow. And that makes me think of that song, Don't Eat the Yellow Snow. I can't remember who sung it, but you know what I'm talking about, right? He did all those weird,
yeah,
funny songs. Yep. You know, this is a strong, it's both a humorous, a nice balance of serious and humorous look at the things that people will go through to be beautiful, to be in fashion. And I like that If brings in Carmine, which I was looking up, and, you know, that actually, it's interesting because Carmine, I don't know if you know this or not, but it's actually a dye made from crushed insects. They take the shells of the female cochineal insects, and they dry them out, then they crush them and grind them up into a powder, and that's what makes a lot of the red coloring that you not only find in blush and lipstick, but also ick, things like Jell-O and Kool-Aid, and, you know, like basically, you know, like if there's a food or a makeup with a red or pinkish color to it, chances are it is made from these insects. And Jeez.
And I love fruit punch. Fucking Abe, Pam, and fucking Abe.
Well, I'm sure you can find, like, organic fruit punch or something. either that or just, you know what, sometimes you have to, it has to be worth the sacrifice. You know, if you love fruit punch that much, just say, you know what, I love fruit punch enough to keep you drinking bug.
Oh, Bailey thought I got mad when I said fucking it. She was like, oh, poor Bailey. I'm not mad. I just said fucking
A.
I'm not mad.
Oh, poor Bailey.
I hate when I get mad and they just get. But anyway, but yeah, it's like fucking A. I didn't know that was the case. But yeah, this is a fantastic. And what I love about it is they're talking about the inner emotions and the brain endorphins, and it's almost a scientific piece when talking about most depression, right? And you're talking about Mystic Glitter Stones and the Stevie before, you know, there's a total inner outer war that's almost taking place when talking about fashion and beauty, because there's people that can dress like a total bum and feel like they're marvelous, baby, and then there's people that have to be able to dress in a certain way, and sometimes you often wonder what is taking them to make them feel that way, you know, or what's taking them to make them feel like the need to have to dress that way. And I feel like this poem really kind of tackles in onto that and in a lot of ways talking about the hot lights, you know. There's just a lot of references in here talking about somebody that feels the need to walk that line of who gives a shit if it's toxic. It's better to look good than to feel good, just like the title. So very well done, Yiff, and I appreciate you writing to our show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Up next, we have You'll Die Trying by Liquid Mind Forever. And the lack thereof auctions parental love. Bustier, penne, grand jeté, what allays, conveys, parlays, forays of grand marnay, fingered sorbet, Paul Poiré, aristocrat and bon vivant, king of fashion, haute couture, fashion queen, roaring through seen and unseen, his butterflies of the night, all right, ignite, parabolic fright. Figural perfume bottles, nipped in waste, clustered porcelain flowers, signature indenture, expenditure, keys to the kingdom, four-bedroom elite, Long Island home, modern up-to-date kitchen, three perfect children, enrolled in boarding school, pool, garden club, avert your eyes, disguise your pain, gain weight, lose status, nothing's gratis, newest apparatus, show your thighs, turn eyes, beauty buys, insecurity, obscurity, conquerable liability, deniability, volatility, alter egocentricity, mendacity, altracity, profanity, insanity, dress to kill, write a will, drink your swill, still your mind, unkind bondage, poundage, outage, scrimmage, diet, cabbage, muscle spasm, bunions, ringworm, yeast infections, imperfections, insurrections, desecration, prefabrication, prenuptial, corruption, pronouns, unction, cosmetic transfiguration, liposuction, beauty's a bitch, baby, end poem.
Wow, what a fantastic write this was. And really, you know, he brought in Elisa Schiaparelli, in which I don't believe was a prompt in it.
And I like that.
And shed, I love when poets shed light into the exact prompt and bring us into somebody else, you know, somebody else that wasn't. So I thought that was awesome by here. And using the quote, "Beauty is pain, my dear," you know, she really fucking captures that in this. And talking about deniability, voluntarily altered, egocentricity, medicinity, all city, profanity, insanity, dressed to kill, right to will, drink your swill. Her wordplay and her rhyme and her cadence is out of this fucking world. I mean, it's just, like, incredible. She is on fire on this right. And what we call it in rap is that you're right in the, right in the cusp, or like where you're like right in the, I'm blanking on it, right in the cusp though.
No.
But it's like, you know what I mean? Like you're right in your pocket. That's what it's called. You're right in the pocket. And she was right in the pocket on this one. You know, when you're just firing on all cylinders and it seems natural and authentic. But it was so hard hitting. She was right in the pocket on this entire piece. And so, Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I have to agree. I've never heard that thing before. I have to say, if somebody had said to me, "You're right in the pocket," I would have thought it applied to playing pool, not to rap. But so learn something new.
Nope.
There.
No,
so,
that means that you're right in your cadence. You're right. You're feeling comfortable. Like everything
very
is
cool.
Yeah, everything is right on point when you're right in the pocket.
Awesome. And I have to agree, she definitely was. I mean, first of all, I like the way her stanzas stagger to give them a sense of movement. The wordplay, the inner and end rhyme, all gives this a professional, like polished, technical aspect to it. I like the emotional aspect too, and how she takes a deep look, a hard-hitting deep look at a history that has told women, you know, how they're supposed to be, not only in physical looks, like the shapes of their body, how skinny or how heavy they should be or shouldn't be, but also who they're supposed to be. You know, they're supposed to have it all together. You know, so oftentimes, throughout history, society has expected women to put on this act of perfection, and especially when it came to being wives and mothers. To me, some of the craziest things to read is when you read articles or snippets from books about tells you how to be the perfect wife in the 1950s, and you're going, how the hell did they manage to do that? Then you know, of course, probably Valium. It's interesting because I was actually reading I was reading an article the other day about how and it might have been actually while I was researching for this contest, about the different time period and decades and what the perfect body was. And how much as I was influenced by the popular models or celebrities of the day, and some of them, like when I'm the Kate Moss and the waif time period of the 1990s, or you know, like Twiggy of the 1960s, you know, there are women who are naturally shaped like that, but for the most part, you know, it's an unreal expectation for women. Honestly, I think probably one of the healthiest time periods for women as far as looks, and even this wasn't realistic for every woman, was probably when the Marilyn Monroe type body was in shape or in fashion, because, you know, she by no means was heavy, but she certainly, you know, had more realistic curves than a lot of the waists and uber thin. But it is interesting how we allow those who are famous to and socially have social status to influence how we think beauty is supposed to be perceived, and the things we're willing to practically kill ourselves for. And she really, Liquid Mind Forever really brings that out with, you know, muscle spasm, bunions, ringworm, yeast infections, imperfections, insurrections. I mean, all the way through, this is amazing. But those end lines, she really shows us what it's like to basically torment yourself in order to stand up to society's idea of what beautiful should be. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Very well said, Pam. And where are we heading to next?
All right, let's see here. All right. We have Threads of Empowerment by Zulfikar Hamdam Awan. And go ahead, Dexter.
Okay. This is Threads of Empowerment, 28. Amidst a world that seeks to charge, change, enclose a statement we arrange, yet it's the souls beneath the threads where true power quietly spreads. Cloth alone won't shape the land, but hearts adorned with purpose grand. Women whose these fabrics wear hold strength and grace beyond compare. Through storms and trials, they stand tall in garments woven or none at all. Their spirits kindle flames of light, igniting change with all their might. But remember, in this world embrace, it's not the cloth, but souls to chase. A better world where all hearts dwell. A woman who wears them well. Poet. Zulfikar Hamdam Awan. End poem. And Pam, can we start with you?
Absolutely. You didn't set an alarm to get a pizza out of the oven or something, did you?
No, actually, I was just heating up a little soup out of the microwave. Did you hear that?
I did, yes.
I heard
soup. Oh, too funny. Oh, no problem. But this is great. There's a wonderful rhyme and flow. I felt like out of all our rites, this had, for the beauty and fashion contest, this had a very inspiring message. I felt like it celebrated women and how the beauty and grace that comes from the inside, and also how a clothing can be a statement of a woman and how she carries herself. And this isn't about, you know, the clothing that makes a woman look, you know, provocative or sexy, but rather about the clothing that shows the person she is on the inside. And I thought this was a great take on the chosen prompt, which was the quote, you know, clothes alone won't, you know, how was that? Clothes alone won't make the history the women who wear them will. And he brought that out really great. And cloth alone won't shape the land, but hearts adorned with purpose grand. The woman who these fabrics wear holds strength and grace beyond compare. So yeah, it's important to look good. It's important to feel good. But what's most important is what you wear on the inside and how you hold yourself and the character that you have. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
I agree, Pam. And I particularly think that from, you don't want to know something, from an outward stance, I think that this poem is extremely important because from everything that I've gathered and from everything that I've heard, you know, there's a lot of difficulty in the Middle East as far as women's culture and garnishing support from the male side of things. And this seems like such a olive branch or whatever you want to say, or such a giving of support from the male stance of women's rights. And so this seems like, you know, this might seem is what it is here, but I feel like this is such a powerful poem on the other side of the world, because women need this kind of support, you know, they're in all aspects and in every facet in other places, to be able to be themselves and to be told that they're powerful and to show that they hold strength and grace. And so I thought that this was a fantastic write and a great show of camaraderie, I guess, with the female sex. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. All right. And up next we have The Silk Bustier by Joe Colt. And it goes like this. It arrived gift-wrapped, sender unknown, donning a large scarlet ribbon tied into a bow. A black linen card was slipped neath a fold. Upon it was scribed, "My darling Joe." My heart skipped a beat. I couldn't help but feel hope as my fingers worked fast at the sealed envelope. I pulled it out slowly as tears welled in my eyes, and I fell to the floor and cried. "I don't love you, and I always will," were the words scribed there with feathered quill. I screamed out, "I hate you," then whispered, "My love, fuck you," I punched at the sky above. Why, this just isn't fair. Then I rose and unveiled the silk bustier. With cold determination, I donned the fine garment. It was red as a rose and black velvet adornments. I rushed to my room and put on my bloomers and dressed for him one last time. Stockings and heels, a hooped underskirt, a black laced Victorian undershirt. I laced it up and pulled it tight, adjusting my bosom to fit just right. I slipped on the dress and with shaking hands, I ironed out the wrinkles of his master plan. Then I brushed out my hair and put it up in a bun, reached for the earrings, the red garnet ones. I put them on stiffly, then dyed my lips, closed my eyes, and I felt him grabbing my hips. "You look beautiful, my darling. It's just such a shame. You've done all this only for me to have to undress." I shook off the memory, though I now felt his gaze, smiling approvingly as he ordered with wave, "Turn around, my darling. I want to drink you all in before we head to the red room and sin." My body betrayed me. My heart began to beat fast as thoughts of his tongue trailed and lingered at last on my erect nipples that ached only for him, his words, his charm, his decadence. I slipped off the stockings, the bloomers too, and I pleasured myself as he used to do. And when I was done, I put it all away in a box in the closet where it's destined to stay. End poem.
Wow, what a piece there, Pam. We've got a lot to unpack. There's obviously pieces of trauma. There's obviously pieces of lust. There's obviously pieces of uncontrollability, you know, that we all have, and that's underneath the laced Victorian undershirt, you know, that she wore. And so she combines all of these things so very well. I want to drink you all in before we head into the red room and sin. My body betrayed me, but it's also a part of you, you know. And so this is such a fantastic piece. I don't know. I'm in awe. Wow, she did this. And actually, I just seen that she had a SoundCloud. I apologize for that. Hopefully everybody checks SoundCloud.
I didn't notice that either. I'm sorry.
And so anytime in the future, Joe Colt, hopefully that you let us know, because we absolutely love get you played on it. So anyway, Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I like this. Wonderful sensuality. A story of love and lust and grief. And I'm not sure if the person, the man left her or if he died, though I did get the impression of death because of her shaking her fist at the sky. But you can, it's almost like sending that gift was that one last moment of control over her. The rhyme and flow in this, the lust, you know, what's really weird about the rhyme, I'd have to look at them side by side. And I'm not saying it's a parody, but the second time reading it, I realized the rhyme scheme in some stanzas sounds very much like The Night Before Christmas. You know what I mean? Because The Night Before Christmas and All Through the House, Not a Creature Was Sleeping. No. It does. It has that kind of rhyme pattern to it, which I found interesting. But, this is a great sensual rite. And I really like what she had to say in her AN about the preparation women to go through to attract, to be attractive is not only timely, but costly too. I don't blame the fashion industry. I blame God. I think women are designed with the desire to make themselves beautiful. And it was, of course, different in Victorian times. So much more clothing, but oh, the thrill of taking it off piece by piece by piece. And I could definitely see that, you know, all those layers. I mean, they might have been a pain in the ass to wear, but if you wanted to build up the anticipation, that would be the way to do it, you know? So great, great take on the chosen prompt and very well done.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. And Pam, where are you taking us?
All right. Let's see here. All right. Up next we have More Green and the Blackest Ebony by Pink Fairy 5. And go ahead, Dexter.
Hey, this is More Green and the blackest ebony. The Egyptian queen's eyes makeup had to be perfect. She instructed her face painter to make it extra green. And the blackest ebony you can imagine, she instructed him. Harry, the creator, had to add more lead and more copper. Each time he thought it was right, she shot him down. More green, more black. And she frowned at his efforts. No one was more difficult to please than Cleopatra. He did not realize she was planning her death day and wanted her corpse to look a certain gorgeous way. End poem. And Pam, why don't you start us out with comments there?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is wonderful. A great brevity that really has a lot to dig into. I like how she brings in the suicide, the death of Cleopatra, and the idea of being the queen's makeup artist or whatever they would have called him at that time, and not realizing that he was making the queen up to be a beautiful corpse, and all the while Cleopatra herself planning her own death and planning how she's going to be found and how she needs to look beautiful in that final moment. I guess not only for those who discover her, but the fact that, you know, there was a strong belief that whatever you look like when you died, that's what you went into the afterlife looking like. And it's fascinating about, you know, Egyptian culture and makeup. You know, not only was it about fashion status, it was also really about taking care of yourself. Like a lot of the eyeliner and stuff like that protected people from the glare of the sun. They wore the head ornaments because they shaved their heads and they shaved their bodies. Usually with like pumice stones and stuff like that, which you can imagine wouldn't be too comfortable because of the fact of body lice. It was just easier to take care of yourself if you didn't have any hair on your body. But yeah, this is really fascinating because it adds a real human aspect to the story of Cleopatra and to the makeup that she wore in her final days, So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is a fantastic write, and Pink Fairy nailed this one. And in such a brevity fashion, you know, in talking about how the beauty was their downfall. You know, and what you would, it's in the moment what you would think is your strength. I guess that's what the whole dichotomy or whatever, the duality or whatever you want to say that it is. It's in the moment what you think is your strength, but in reality is actually your weakness. And that's almost what beauty comes down to being. And she captures that so well in this piece that I thought that this was incredible. More green, more black. He frowned at his efforts. No one was more difficult than Cleopatra. He did not realize that she was planning her death day and wanted her corpse to look a certain gorgeous way. Awesome, right, Pink Fairy? And very well done. So, Pam, what did you... I keep saying that. Pam, move us to the next piece.
Absolutely. All right. And up next, we have A Painful Song by Passion's Promise. And it goes like this. Upon bare flesh, the markings of sadness, brutality, and lack of love. I trembled, I did beneath sleep, breath taken away, in and out I creep. Once a limb, there now it's gone, and upon the stump a painful song. My dear, the beauty can still be seen, I walk with stitches now serene. The mask once worn has dissolved some, look out sweet vision, here I come. Sunshine springs up, sunflowers rise, without said limb, tears fall from battered eyes. Beauty is seen beyond a sorrow's grip, into sweet sedation, into peace I slip. Love is felt around my waist as grandchildren kiss their Nana's face. Beauty can be seen in terrible timing. Beneath clothing or without, there's always sunshine neath God's lining. End poem.
What a beautiful rhyming poem here by Passion's Promise. A painful song. It had many song qualities upon it. Upon bare flesh, the markings of love, sadness, brutality, lack of love. You know, it just really kicked off this breathtaking song of how seeking love can just be so painful. And love is felt around my waist as grandchildren kiss her Nana's face. Beauty can be seen in terrible timing. Beneath clothing or without, there's always sunshine neath God's lining. You know, so much of love can be in bad timing. And you know, you look back on past lovers and go, God, I wish that this would have maybe turned out better. And that's a painful song, and that's where the title is. And so it's like, you know, to be able to look back on the past is a painful song. And so I thought Passion's Promise nailed this. So what did you think, Pam?
Oh, I have to agree. You know, it has a wonderful lyrical quality, especially with the rhyme and flow. You know, it's just, it's beautiful. It's heartfelt. I really thought that, you know, the idea of a woman or a person who's, well, it must be a woman because of the Nana part, grandma. But the idea of a woman who's lost a part of her body has lost a limb. You know, and is no longer physically the same. And I can imagine, you know, like if you're somebody because of what, you know, diabetes, a car accident or whatever, for whatever reason has lost the limb, or even those women who have to have, you know, their breasts removed because of breast cancer, a mastectomy, you know, what it must be like to lose a part of yourself and have those scars left behind. I always thought it was a wonderful thing that you see those tattoo artists who give breast cancer survivors the tattoos on their chest. You know, and I always thought that was so beautiful and so meaningful to, you know, put a work of art where there are scars. And in this poem, I think God, she has a spiritual aspect where God puts his own work of art in this woman's life. Yeah, she's not physically the same as she used to be, but there's so much beauty in her life. She has family, she has friends, she is loved, and most importantly, she has her grandchildren that bring the sunshine into her life. So wonderful look at inner beauty and the struggles of life. So very well done.
Perfectly said there, Pam. And take us to our next one.
All right. Let's see here. If things will cooperate with me. Maybe. All right. Sorry about that. My Kindle Fire screen keeps bouncing up and down.
Sometimes the Kindle Fire is sexy like that.
They are. They are. I mean, I appreciate
it. Bouncing up and down. No, I'm joking. No.
I just got what you said. I'm like, oh, yep, agreeing with you.
Kennel fire is sexy like that. So take your time. We're all waiting here in anticipation. Sweat dripping.
That's
on
right.
Our face.
With bated breath.
Yeah.
All right. Well, up next we have Mask of Youth by Nan529. And go ahead, Dexter.
All right. Let me see if I can bounce this ring. Mask of Youth by Nan529. It was dark time, smallpox rages, Tudor England. Prayers offended up for the life of the young queen. Elizabeth falsely believed no illness existed that kill a queen. Dr. Burcott dismissed. I had the pox, fool. Terrified, she raised at the time. Fever took over blisters, covered her face. Dr. Burcott came back to with her ladies in waiting, with nurses and the queen. Prayers answered by God, the monarch was saved. Her face covered with pock marks, left forever behind. She took to her grave. Venetian crews mixed into her bowl, brushed of on her skin of purest white, a deadly mix of vinegar and white lead painted for the weak. First used in China, then used in Greece, they believed it brought a mask of eternal youth to the hands, neck, and face. Her eyebrows plucked thin and high, bright red, pigments of metal painted in her lips. Don't forget the belladonna's drops of dilated her pupils, all in the mix. Black coal, her eyeliner, and soot for the chimneys, for her eyelashes. Now she looked like a queen. Believing it shows a high breed, a woman of beauty, fertility, and class. After a week, would remove the mask using a rose, pure rose water, mercury, honey, crushed eggshells. How her skin felt so soft, how it turned her skin gray. She says at 69 she died of cancer. Or was it vanity or ignorance? But I put it to you. With white lead and mercury, belladonna drops doing their worst. Her loss of hair, her memory loss, troubles with her. Ingestion were all signs of poisoning. For 40 years, this mask of youth was really a mask of death. End poem. And Pam, let's start with you.
All right. Great read there, Dexter. You know, slightly off topic, but I was thinking, this had me thinking. I actually was reading an article today, and I can't remember which one it was. I'll have to look that up later. But there was actually a queen at the age of 65 who had a 20-year-old lover. And the first time she turned him away, he stood outside of her bedroom chamber wailing out loud. And I was like, dang, you go, girl. 65 years old, 20-year-old lover crying outside your bedroom.
He's got the fire.
Yep. But man, once again, you know, Nan's ability to have attention to detail to show us that she really, truly knows what she's writing about, or she definitely does her research. She cares about what she writes about. And I did find this to be one of the most fascinating prompts, that the idea that was yours, that we write about the makeup of Queen Elizabeth I. And, you know, just the fact that she would have to, first of all, you know, it's understandable because she was a woman in a man's world. She was put into a position of power. There were many men and women who wanted to steal the throne from her. she couldn't show any weakness. She had to keep those scars covered. She couldn't let people know she was vulnerable. You know, it's just fascinating. It's definitely one of those extreme examples of the way people would poison themselves for the sake of beauty. I mean, you know, the belladonna drops, the mixture of lead with white lead and vinegar. I mean, gosh, just the way that that must have smelled. And I like that the thought that, you know, Nan proposes at the end, with some say at 69 she died of cancer, or was it vanity or ignorance? But I put it to you, with white lead and mercury, belladonna drops all doing their worst. Her loss of hair, her memory loss, troubles with her indigestion were all signs of poisoning. For 40 years, this mask of youth was really a mask of death. So just an amazing write and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Yeah, this was a fantastic write. And you know what it actually reminded me a lot of is of the classic painters also, which is actually kind of ironic. Painters like went totally nuts, and many of it was due to lead poisoning and licking their brushes to make them fine. And the absorbence of lead, you know, during that time, there was not really much of a understanding of the destruction of what lead, an absorbance of an abundance of lead would do to your brain and what would do to your body. And so she ironically suffered very much so the death of many of our classic painters, and many of which that quote unquote went crazy, and they were really suffering from lead poisoning, and so this one really captures that extremely well in here. And the fact that she lived to 69 is even a testament to her, I think, strength, be able to really, like you said, persevere through things and through to have that dog in you, I guess you could say, or whatever you want to say, that she just didn't want to show vulnerability. And she I don't know if she would have lived to 69 if she didn't really truly deep down want to carry the throne in a certain way. So she definitely had a certain edge to her. And so I thought that this write captured all of that. So very well done. And
absolutely.
Pam, where do you want to do next?
All right. Well, up next, and I have to say, I know we brought this up the last show, but when you were commenting, I thought again, and last time I can remember what they were called, but it brought up the idea of, and this time I remember the Radium Girls. Was it World War II or something like that, where they used radium to paint the glow in the dark watches that were used for soldiers, and the horrible stuff that they went through because nobody realized that radium was that poisonous, and they were like, they would put it on their dresses, they would paint their lips with it. You know, I mean, they basically were just using it to like when they went out on the town to get dialed up, and you know,
yeah.
It just did horrible things to the mind and the body.
Yeah, and nobody had any idea at the time, you know.
So yeah,
very good point.
And up next we have Beauty and Fashion by Jenny the Deep. And wait a minute, did I read the last one or did you? Let me look at this. You read the last one, so I'll be reading this one. All right. So here we go. Beauty is fashion, and fashion changes yearly, making history, creating silk and lace clothing since Cleopatra, Egyptian cotton to satin, never out of fashion like women and beauty. Clothing is important for people everywhere. Not only is it for fashion, or a popularity contest, but the necessity in life, no matter the fashion, we all need good clothing. End poem.
Well, this is a fascinating brevity, absolutely, in beauty and fashion. And the, and she, this is a, what is it called, a diametric?
Let's see, she, Rickometer.
Is that what she said?
Yep, it's in the AN.
But Rickometer, okay. Well, there is yep. another poem also, too, that is called, like, Dia something, that where it's done in diamond
fashion. I know
what,
I've written that form before. That form is similar, but it's, I think it's got less lines.
Yeah, I've done that fashion, too, before, where it's written in diameter, too, where I think it almost just falls in both, but for Rickometer. So I appreciate poems, and this is something that she hasn't done as far as I know, and so I appreciate her trying to do it in another fashion. Beauty is fashion, and fashion changes yearly. It right away talks about the context of change, almost like technology. You know, it's like it can happen in a blink of an eye where you're out of date. And talking about Cleopatra and Egyptian cotton, it's kind of shocking that the people that have, like, been in fashion for so long are still in fashion, you know, because it's, like, it's almost timeless. You know, Cleopatra is a timeless, almost a timeless person and a timeless way that she dressed, and it's talked about in here. Clothing is important for people everywhere, not only for fashion. It is a necessity of life, right?
Oh, quote absolutely.
Unquote. Quote unquote. In our things, right? Especially as a man, I believe this, that it is a fashion, because I couldn't imagine being around. I love coaching kids. I coach kids in football. I teach kids. I have to be fully clothed. You know, I couldn't imagine appropriately handling this, if not,
right.
You know. And so it is necessary. And so I thought that she tackles all of that. So what did you think, Pam?
Oh, I agree. And, you know, not only is it kind of in some ways a moral necessity, and I think people could argue about that differently. You know, some people, some cultures, nudity is, you know, completely acceptable and natural. They don't think anything of it. But, you know, we live in a society, and I tend to agree where, you know, there's nothing wrong with some modesty. But also, I mean, come on, if you live in extremely cold environments like we do, like 6 to 9 months out of the year, you want your wiggly giblets covered up, you know? It's cold.
Yep, it does.
So, yep. But, yeah, I really like how she did this in the Rickometer style, which, you know, gives it a nice polished look. I like how the first stanza speaks on the different types of fabric and the history of the fabric, from Egyptian cotton to satin. So I thought that was a nice little touch. And the second stanza, I really like how that does speak on how clothing is a necessity in life. You know, I mean, if you think about, you know, how many homeless people there are in the United States alone, and, you know,
yeah.
Having to, you know, I mean, it's just scary. I mean, you know, cities like, you know, Duluth, Minneapolis, Chicago, I mean, so many of these cities which are cold,
yeah.
I mean, people are dying, and you know, so it really is a necessity for so many. And she actually was inspired by the quote, "Fashion is a part of the world and part of history. It's not a meaningless swirl of meaningless clothes. they, clothes, reflect the times. So wonderful write by Jenny and very well done.
I wholeheartedly agree. And Pam, bring us on to the next one.
All right. Up next, we have Cover Your Naked Ankle, You Tramp by Julie Buck. And go ahead, Dexter.
All right. This is Cover Your Naked Ankles, You Trollop. Whose husband is that helping her with her iced tea as one of the five women? In the year 1910, all 20-eyed on whose man, whose attention to Claire was just too much to bear. No oversized flowery hat or dainty parasol for the women. Who has one ankle showing? Because for many of the men to halt what they were doing, to move in closer for a clearer view, one lady hands on hips, she's got nerve. But her smile was the fit to kill. And steady now, steady. She needed to take a breather. No naked ankled wanton woman will take you from me. Well, not till I say I'm ready. If husband man, you're no bargain either. End poem.
Great read
and,
there, Dexter. I really like the humor in this one. Yeah. You know, she really captures that picture so well. These four women, like they're all looking in the same direction and they all have different expressions on their face. And obviously you can't see what they're looking at. So Julie's created a story for us where they're all looking at this young woman and they're passing judgment on her when really the judgment should be passed on the husband who keeps insisting on sniffing around after these ankles. No oversized flowery hat or dainty parasol for this woman who has one ankle showing, just cause for many of the men to halt what they were doing to move in closer for a cleaner view. Not only is it great storytelling and wonderful humor, but she takes a look at a time period where it really was scandalous to have one's ankles showing. And even more scandalous to be off by yourself as a woman, you know, an unescorted woman off by herself with the attention of a married man. But I do have to say, I really like those end lines. No naked ankled wanton woman will take you from me. Well, not till I say I'm ready, because husband man, you're no bargain either. So great write and very well done.
God, I'm so ashamed right now that I can't think of my grandma's favorite movie all time that this reminds me of. It's one of the greatest movies of all time. Pam, help me out, please.
One of the greatest movies of all time.
They're all women like of that parture and they're talking about the man and he's trying to hit on them and he's got the slick look and it's from the 30s. Gone with the Wind.
Oh my.
Never mind.
Oh, Gone with the Wind. Okay. Yeah. Well, because I was thinking in my head, I'm like, okay, I know what are some of the movies I would consider the greatest movies of all time. But I'm trying to figure out if I was a woman approximately the age of Dexter's grandmother, what would I think is the greatest movie of all time?
No, it's Gone. Sorry, I didn't mean to put you in there, but Gone with the Wind. This reminded me of Gone with the Wind quite a bit because there is that little bit of attention in that movie that was like this between women.
Yes.
You know, and that's what's awesome about this write is because it talks about the beauty between women and then also the tension between men. You know what I mean? Because it's like it's you showing off for the same, ironically, it's you showing off for the same sex, isn't it? I mean, a lot of it is you showing off for the same sex. It's not even actually the opposite sex recognizing you for doing this. And so I thought that this was fantastic. And so it seemed just to me like Gone with the Wind. And she captured that in that picture. So very well done, Julie Buck.
Absolutely. And that was a great observation there with Gone with the Wind. Very cool. All right. And now we're done with contest entries. So we'll be going into the on-topic open poetry. And up next, we have The Dizzy Heights of Fashion by T. Perry 898. Fashion, what a fine commodity, assembled in a flash. Vanity is given precedence to part you from your cash. As all these shallow cosmopolitans will walk into a trap and will shimmy, strut, and sparkle in a masquerade of pap. On the catwalk of disaster stands a maladjusted fool. Starve yourself and lift the bottom, and you're sure to have a ball. My, my, what a fine ensemble. Cashmere hemlines, how unique. Uglies never looked no better. Give me sexy, posh, and chic. Be the first to have the must-have. It's a steal at any price. It's a passion or addiction. It's a sin and it's a vice. Drop the cleavage, steal the headlines in your silken backless gown. You'll be up in seventh heaven and the star of Tinseltown. So disposable, expendable, the winner's sure to lose. What once was a strutting peacock is now old, forgotten news. Come on, loosen up your wallies, it's a travesty and crime. There are losers, never winners, in the fashion pantomime. End poem.
Great read there, Pam, and great right there by T. Perry. You know, I feel like this is just almost like the technology world, the how fast things change, how fast you can go from the thing of the now to the thing of the past, and how quickly you can go from sexy, how quickly you can go from reaching. You know what I mean? Like one person that comes to mind is almost Britney Spears. You see Britney Spears in a lot of these videos lately, like almost kind of going naked and doing all of these things. And it's like, it's almost like not that attractive because it's like she's so reaching, you know, and she's trying to, it's a passion or addiction. It's a sin and it's a vice. It's because she's doing it out of the vice and out of the addiction and out of the sin. And I thought that this right was just fantastic. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, I liked this one. This was actually for one of my After Midnight contests. And it just so happened that I ran this contest, and one of the quotes by Oscar Wilde that I put in there was, fashion is a form of ugliness so intolerable, we have to alter it every 6 months. And I've given this one the silver. And when we had this contest, this show, and we weren't getting a whole lot of rights, I thought of this right. And I thought, you know what, this will fit in really nicely with this particular topic and this particular show. You know, I thought it had wonderful rhyme and flow. I like how this speaks on the idea of people who become addicted to the latest fad and allow fashion to control them. And I like how the end lines speak on the idea that we're just willing to dish out this money for this addiction, where there's really never any winners. There's only losers. It's all about getting our money. It's all about these vices that we have to be the most popular, the most, you know, well-known. And then before you know it, everything's out of fashion, and it's this whole vicious cycle. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
I agree. And Pam, where are we into next?
All right. Well, up next, Dexter, I'm going to put You're Right. So when you see it, give it a read.
Okay. This is He Doesn't Even Notice by Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey. Feeling beautiful, but feeling minimal. Hardest working of the second. He doesn't even notice. He doesn't even notice. A life of chanting the unobtainable. A day staring at the uncomfortable. Run and run far away. He doesn't even notice. All the cramming and altering. The crying and faltering. Is it for him to notice me? To notice or me? Because he doesn't even notice. End poem.
Great reading right there, Dexter. This was a wonderful brevity on what it must be like to be a woman who puts all this work into herself and still plays second fiddle. And not that this happens to women only, but I think for the most part it tends to, because it does seem to be more often that you'll run into a situation where a woman will do something like get a haircut or dye her hair, and the husband won't even notice. And I really liked all three stanzas, but I especially like that center stanza, which I really think grounds everything. A life of chancing the unattainable, a day staring at the uncomfortable, run and run far away, because he doesn't even notice. Like I said, it really speaks on a woman who plays that second fiddle. And, all the cramming and altering, the crying and faltering, that was great rhyme and flow. And it reminds us within those lines of everything a woman goes through to accomplish beauty, not only for society, but for an individual relationship. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And did you want to say anything about your poem?
No, I think that you really captured it. I tried to really write from a woman's standpoint here, and from a man that, it's funny because it's like, it's almost like women are from Venus, men are from Mars or whatever it is, because it's like I am guilty of not noticing sometimes of different, and it's sad that the beauty and the pressure of beauty is pushed on upon people. Because what I do notice is personalities and all of these things and the things that are being done, but it's like, I am guilty, and so that's why I wrote this poem, because I am guilty of not noticing the effort put into the beauty, and so this is a fantastic write.
Did you just say that your own write was
a fantastic write about my own
write? Wow. That's okay.
Sorry,
you know,
Pam.
What? I think it's a refreshing thing for you to have.
Is it awesome?
I like confidence.
This might be the winner of the contest. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right.
You know what I meant.
Yep. I know what you meant. Oh, man. I couldn't resist. As soon as I came out of your mouth, I'm like, I'm going to pick on him about that.
No, you better pick on me about it. We got about 10 minutes left. It's a Friday night.
There you go. Well, before I continue to pick on you, I actually have put up one of my poems to read, which is a pre-write, but it's a pre-write that I think fits with the topic. So
And it's a fantastic right, I might
add. Yeah, and it's a fantastic right. That's right, exactly. All right, this is Phantoms of Whalebone Corsets, and it goes like this. She walks the phantoms of whalebone corsets, a history of sunken ships abbreviated into the torn hymen. She is chameleon blue, a tourism of porous stone, chalky outline set in the sanctity of self. She questions the world's ability to see her beyond the feminine form. Some days she awakens to an open womb, weeping a dichotomy of dot-com crazes, white picket fences, Stepford wives, hanging the laundry to dry upon the hemline of her nausea. Mother was the sterilized personification, the lithium controversy, tequila lips bartering the harvest, calcified lemon wedges upon candy apple smiles, stigmas of unbound chemicals. The Holy Ghost was blinked eyes of black smudges beyond the spot between the spines of a sidewalk. Father was a morphine campaign, syllabic crusades and taut leather bindings. He hated the gods of rock and roll and the way Tin Lizzy stole the show with her axe to grind. Beyond the surface, we are all guilty of oil leaked attempts to bury the time capsules and shrink the gray matter. Numb fingers sew an eternity of empires into the acceptability of a turned eye. End poem.
Pammy, Pammy. All right. So, when you talked about calcified lemon wedges upon candy apple spiles, stigmas abound chemicals. Your vocabulary and your word usage is just stellar throughout this piece, and the way that you bounce back into the three stanzas to the four, I don't know what the hell that's called. I think it's called pamiotomy. I think that this is a fantastic, right? Because of whalebone corsets. You hit us with this hard-hitting imagery, but you also bring in a ton of history within it also. And like I said, this is pamiology, maybe in its finest. She questioned the world's ability to see her beyond the feminine form. Some days she awakened to open womb. This is directly talking about the strength of women, because, you know, men don't endure that type of pain, you know, to go through like C-sections and to go through the giving birth. It ties to the strength that women has and what they go through. And I thought that this was just a fabulous write, and the way that you presented it was just structurally fantabulous. So very well done, Pam. Anything you would like to say?
I think you really, really nailed it. I really was trying to take a deep look, not only at an individual woman's life and what it would be like to try to, you know, for her life, but also the history of what women have gone through, you know, as far as, you know, the corsets that they used to have to wear, the makeup, the expectations of womanhood. And, you know, yeah, I mean, the pain that we go through to be beautiful, to be accepted, you know, so you definitely caught that. And this won a silver in one of Kevin's contests, which makes it a very fine poem, just so you know.
Yeah.
That.
Whoa, tell me. Well, that does make it a big fine poem, because I've put in some of my best into Kevin's poems, and I've gotten shit out. And so for you to get a silver, that is a high class. Let's trot this around for the next 4 minutes, Pam. Let's see if we can trot this around. Because I think that this is...
No,
we are going to parade this around. God damn it. This is a big deal, Pam. I'm not kidding you. No, I'm just...
Oh, my God. No, no, this was like, geez, months ago, years ago. It was 2 years ago. So
perfect. Perfect. That's what we're looking for these days.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well... You know, yeah, well, I think tonight was a great show. I loved the various takes on the different prompts. As always, I enjoy hanging out with you and, you know, appreciate the poets. You know, it's all great, all good stuff. And I hope people will check out our contest for next week on, the Nazi Germany and the what was the title exactly? Oh, yeah, the Holocaust. Nazi Germany and the Holocaust.
Yep.
So, yep.
Yep. Make sure and check us out for the Nazi Germany and the Holocaust show. We'll be judging up all of these other coming up. Hopefully everybody continues to have faith in us as a show, and we're going to continue to deliver some hard-hitting historical pieces. I had people like Nan and a few people ask me, they go, well, we like your show as long as it's history. Well, yeah, that's exactly what we are. I want to make sure that everybody knows that. Yeah, this is going to be some hard-hitting and actual real life historical facts that are going to be always presented in our show, and that's the whole basis of our show. And so I can promise you that. And so I hope that we continue to see people that enjoy history here, and I love to see our reoccurring writers and poets. You guys make this show possible. You guys make this show phenomenal. And me and Pam will continue to do it for you guys. So thank you so much. And thank you to everybody that listens. I'm glad that we were able to redo this show. You guys all deserve this. This was a treat to do. So thank you very much, and take care.